I have like $300. I live there for like a week. I'll go get on Craigslist and I'll cut grass and I'll make 20 bucks here, 50 bucks here to like get some food. I'll sleep in the car, whatever it takes. Worst case scenario, I just call my mom and I'm just like, hey mom, I screwed up. I don't know what I was thinking. That was like the last thing in my head. No plan B, like it was all burn the bridges, plan A, just go for it.
What's up everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to six figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. And like I say every single time, I try to bring you guys awesome guests, and today is going to be no different. I have an awesome guy by the name of Michael Aubrey to kind of come on the show today, kind of go through his journey of how he got out to California into the tech scene, why he has pivoted and moved, still in California, but why he's moved, what he's learned along the way, how what he's learned about taking risk and what's needed to sacrifice to get what you really want. So it's going to be an awesome conversation that I'm excited to share with you guys. So Michael, welcome to the podcast.
So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So let's kick this thing off by, let's just set the stage. Like, who are you and what are you about? What's that kind of 2-minute backstory on yourself that'll kind of give us a little insight into your life?
Yeah, I mean, just first and foremost, I love the premise of your podcast. Just like hustling to freedom is definitely something I'm about, because I feel like life is a beautiful place and it's a temporal place, and you really want to get the most out of it. And in order to do that, I feel like you want to have a setup where you're free, where you can basically, you know, take a little bit of time off if you needed to explore the world, to really, you know, unleash creative energy and have the time to be able to be creative and not to sort of be dictated under the guise of fear that a lot of, like, you know, 9-to-5 jobs, a lot of employers will create the sense of fear to get you to comply. And so I've always sort of been an anarchist, my whole life, of like not really like abiding by the rules. That started with school. I wasn't really the most excellent student. And there was a reason for that. It was because I wasn't focused on the common narrative of, okay, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to get good grades. I was just focused on what I enjoyed personally. And, you know, the bright side of that is I figured out what I liked, what, inspired me. I was always a dreamer. And so I would always live in this fantasy land. And for me, I had to figure out a way to, you know, turn things into a reality. So for me, I was just sort of against the grain my whole life. And, you know, to me, it felt bad because I wasn't getting straight A's and I wasn't doing everything that sort of, you know, my teachers and my parents wanted me to do. But I realized that it's just your life becomes what you focus on. And so a lot of people that got straight A's, I realized they got straight A's because that's what they focused on. I was able to sort of discover what I liked because that's what I focused on. And so over time, I realized that if you're not getting good grades or if you're not excelling at your job, it's not because you're bad. It's just because you're not focused on that thing. And so really for me, I've always just been on this quest of like figuring out what it is that I care about and how do I turn that into something that I can make money with. How do I turn that into something that, it's an integration between what I really enjoy doing. And it's also something that, you know, provides for myself and for my family. And so that's sort of been the quest towards freedom for me, is really, figuring out, you know, how to break the common narrative and go after what you love. That's a great premise that you're on. I think that's sort of something that people are really waking up to, is that, you know, this common narrative is kind of a crock of shit, and you can you can create your own destiny based on the things that you focus on. It's just it's a matter of understanding how to love something, how to be passionate about it, but also make money from it. And
yeah, I was going to ask you is like, what was the first thing you did to bridge the gap between like something you enjoyed and something you loved doing to making that
a great business question. I mean, I feel like, I got lucky with the boom of the internet in 2009, 2010. That was sort of like the sort of beginning grounds of internet marketing. I think it even dates back a little bit further back than that, but I think it really started becoming more of a like in your face thing with, you know, YouTube and stuff. And for me, it was like, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But I knew that I liked video games. I liked software. I liked technology. I didn't have a lot of money. So I pirated games back then. And that's sort of what opened this world of, hey, there's all these like really cool softwares that are just for the taking. How do I make something of this? And then that just sort of led me down a rabbit hole of Googling things. The first question was, well, I have all this cool stuff. Let me play around with it. How do I use it? And then how do I make money from it? So it was really just sort of playing a game of a puzzle and connecting the dots of just Googling things and listening to the advice of other YouTubers and how to make money here, and then just applying it myself and sort of testing it out and seeing what I liked, what I didn't like, what worked, what didn't work. For me, I've always wanted to be an internet marketer. Like I always wanted to get into that, but I didn't naturally fall into that. I naturally fell into coding. I naturally fell into design. Like that's what I really enjoyed doing. I liked creating technology and creating, you know, websites and apps and things like that. So then I sort of fell into that, but I wasn't making money initially, but I was like, okay, now this is what I actually like. This is what I'm doing now. How do I make money from it? So I initially went into it with like, how do I make money? And then realized, in sort of adapting to that, finding what I liked, because in order to make money with AdSense, you need to know how to build a website. So I built the website and then I realized, oh, I don't really know how to market, but I like building websites. So then that's when I was like, okay, well, maybe I could sell a service. So that's when I got into, advertising on the Warrior Forum back then. It was a community for internet marketers and people needed a website. So I figured, hey, you know, I like building websites. Let me go out, reach out to internet marketers and see if they would pay me to build them a website. So that's sort of how I was able to integrate the two. But then, you know, after a year, I was like, you know what, like, this is cool, but it's not 100% fulfilling. Like during that time, I was like really motivated, really ambitious. And I was reading books, like Creativity Inc. from Ed Catmull, the founder of Pixar. And like, just like listening to that whole story of how, you know, his vision was to turn, a computer generated, like computer graphics into an actual full fledged movie. Instead of like using the traditional like frame by frame animation where you would like draw it out like back mm-hmm. in like the Disney times, like they would have like sort of like a booklet that just sort of moved frame by frame. He actually wanted to do this with a computer, and this was back in 1970, and it took him 30 years to finally make the first Toy Story. But like there's this whole journey of him having the idea, the ambition in the 70s, building a team, getting introduced to George Lucas, Steve Jobs, going out to Silicon Valley to make his dreams come true. And this was really inspiring for me. And I was reading all these other books from Silicon Valley. And I was like, holy shit, this is where I got to go. Like, this is where you take things to the next level. This is where ideas and technology are really respected. And this is where things can turn into the things that inspire humanity. Like Toy Story was like in the 90s, like one of the most critical films that really inspired the youth, inspired mm-hmm. folks like myself, and I'm sure you and other people.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's one of the best. And it was like the literally first like computer generated movie. And that's not even that long ago, which is crazy. But now everything is computer generated. Even like the realistic movies like the Avengers and things like that, they're all computer generated. And so like for me, that was just really cool. It was a really cool place, a breeding ground of innovation, and I really wanted to be there at any cost. And this is where sort of just like saying fuck it, life is short, like the worst thing that can ever happen is death, right? And so and typically that's not really a thing that you're going to end up facing when you take these risks, but in your head you like it's the equivalent of death, but in reality it's not actually going to come down to that. So for me, I was doing the freelancing, but I actually took a step back to really get good at software. Like there's a difference between like getting a WordPress theme, customizing it a little bit, to actually understanding how databases work, how to do like operations to read, write, delete, how to like architect an application so that it can handle a bunch of users and there's like user interaction and things like that. So I really wanted to dive deep into to the world of software. And so I took a year off. It was a hard time because I wasn't making money and I was like in my early 20s, like late teens. I was bad in school. And so my mom was concerned, like, what are you doing cooped up in the room all the time? I don't understand it. Like, can you get a life? Can you get a job? Can you go do something with your life? And I was just like, mom, trust me. Like, by the time I'm 30, I'm going to be a millionaire. Now, I haven't quite got there yet. It's still my goal. But I'm just like, I was super ambitious. Like, just trust me. Like, there's a tech boom happening. Like, technology is important. I know it's 2009. I know you're a late bloomer. Like, you're a baby boomer. You don't really understand this. So it's fine. I just have to be empathetic and understand that. And so I just kept working. And then it got to a point where it was like a tipping point where she was just really getting on me. And I was just like, all right, you know what? Screw this. I gotta make a change. I gotta get out of here. I gotta go make a change. So that's what I did. I went and moved in with my friend in his basement. And I worked at Verizon selling phones for a little bit. And that was just, it was gruesome. And so like there's the next wave of things. I'm just, I can't stand this. I gotta get out of this town. I'm reading all these books. And that's why I was just like, screw it. Like I've really taught myself over the past year how to become a software engineer. I feel confident. Like I built a basketball stat tracking app for the basketball league I was in. I was like, it was a pretty good app. And I did the design, I did the engineering, I did user testing. I talked to the stat guy and got feedback. And I was like, holy crap, I could go to Silicon Valley and I could probably be an engineer. Like I know I don't have like credibility. I didn't go to school, but if I just go out there, position myself, talk to the founders, talk to the companies and talk to the right people and just like sort of navigate through Silicon Valley, I'll find a job. Like I'll be able to convey that I can write PHP and JavaScript and all that stuff because I can Google. Like if I can Google and I can yeah. you know, like really like just learn and apply what I'm learning to actual real world products and projects and things of that sort, I can prove myself through my work, through my actual results. And so I was like, that was my theory. So I was like, okay, I used to make money online by advertising. I would only make a few hundred dollars doing websites. I sold myself way too cheap, but I wasn't that confident with my website designing skills at that time. But I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to up my prices. I'm going to put an ad on the Word Forum. I'm just going to take off. I'm just going to go to California and we'll see what happens. You know, worst case scenario, I have like $300. I live there for like a week. I sort of, you know, I'll go get on Craigslist and I'll cut grass and I'll make 20 bucks here, 50 bucks here to like, you know, get some food. I'll sleep in the car, whatever it takes. Worst case scenario, I just call my mom and I'm just like, hey mom, I screwed up. Like, I don't know what I was thinking.
Take
I was
me
like,
back.
That was a nuclear option. That was a nuclear option. That was like the last thing in my head. Like no plan B, like it was all burn the bridges, plan A, just go for it. And so, yeah, I just made that happen and then just sort of worked my way up to, you know, different software engineering jobs. And I didn't realize it was like $100,000+ a year. I thought it was, you know, it was good money, but I didn't know it was $100,000+. And I just sort of stumbled across that. For me, it wasn't even about the money. I just wanted to be a part of the movement. And then, you know, working at, you know, first company was $70,000 and I moved on up to $100,000 job. And then I got a raise to $120,000. And then I left on savings to like try to start a YouTube channel. And I was just like, well, this is too much work. I don't like doing all this video editing. And it's like hard getting in front of the camera every single day and having this like electrifying personality. And it's just like, it was exhausting. So I went back into software and then my salary went up to 200K. I was like, wow, this is great. But then it was just like, I really want to build my own thing. Like I want to build a machine. I want to build a system that just like generates value to the masses. And then on the receiving end, you know, I have that freedom. I have the ability to just work directly with the customer. I have the ability to like get on the phone with somebody, talk about what their problems are, and then use my engineering skills to be able to create a solution for that problem.
Why do you think you weren't satisfied with 200,000?
Because it's like the money, I still felt like I was in shackles. You know, I still felt I had to report to a boss. Like it was like, if you don't get here at 8 o'clock, then you're not a part of the mission. Then you're a slacker. Then it felt like school all over again. It's just like, for me, it wasn't about the money. It was like the money almost sometimes bosses and employers will use as a way to control you. It's like, oh, well, we're paying you, so you have to do what we say. And so for me, it's like, I don't like that sort of operation. I don't like that. I like understanding what problems are. I like delivering a solution and then getting compensated for that directly and not sort of being controlled by, oh, we pay you money, so you got to listen to us. And plus, the abundance of problems that exist and just the abundance of different ideas that you can sort of, you know, take on and pursue to turn into a company are infinite, right? Like, there's no shortage of ideas. There's no shortage of success. Like, you, like, I'm committed 100% to be an entrepreneur. Like, I have a note that says fuck a 9-to-5, never going back to that again at any cost. And that's my mindset. There's no plan B. Like, this is it. Like, I will figure out a way. And that's sort of been like my mindset all along. Like, I got a little comfortable working at jobs. I was like, okay, like, I'll dilly daddle on the side hustle. And then, you know, worst case scenario, I'll just like, I'll talk to some recruiters. I'll have a plan B. And then, you know, if I run low under like 10K, I'll go get a job, whatever. I'm like, no, now I'm like, fuck that. Like, it's my mentality of when I came out here in the first place, there is no plan B. Like, nuclear option, if I'm like borderline about to die, then I'll maybe do plan B. But it's like, my mindset is like, there is no plan B, like plan A all the way.
What was the tipping point that made you get to that point where you're like, cool, like, yeah, 200K is nice, but like, I'm done with this. Was there like a moment that like flipped the switch for you and you were like, all right, this is it, going all in?
Yeah, I think, you know, at a certain point, you know, there's levels to money in terms of like, they say $75,000 is enough to really be happy as an individual, right? Your lifestyle somewhat increases after 75,000, but not that much, right? There's not a huge difference between 75K and like 200K. Like, honestly speaking, like, there's not a huge difference. Like, you could probably like build a little bit more savings a little more quickly, which is a upside of making 200K. And that's good if you want to like jump ship and start a business, so you can really start collecting that extra few thousand dollars a month. But there's not really a huge difference in lifestyle. Like, in my head, my lifestyle is I want to be well known. Like, I want to have like been known to like leave an impact on society. Like, when I leave this planet, like, I want to leave a legacy. Like, I want to actually get to sort of like an elite level of sort of producing. And I want to be able to like mentor people. Like, when I'm in my mid-30s, I want to be able like, hey, this is like how I was able to get to this point in life. And here I want to help you get there as well. And I just, for me, like, I hate being average. Like, I don't like being average. I want to be above average. I want to do everything I can to just like leave a legacy on this planet. And so for me, it was like the 200K was just like, that's cool, but like, I want to take it to the next level. Like, I want to be able to like get the most out of reality, get the most out of life, like squeeze the lemon out of life to the best of my ability. Cause there's, life is short. Like, might as well just put it out there, you know, like screw it. Like, it's a short life. It's just
for sure. What was your, so when you walked away from that and you were in, you know, on your entrepreneurial track at that point, what was your first venture? Like, what did you walk into?
Yeah. I mean, so I called my buddy who I met in San Francisco. He had moved down to San Diego. This is sort of what triggered it. I was just tired of like, my bosses would keep like bringing me in and talking to me and being like, hey, like, you know, you're showing up at 8:15. We need you to show up at 8 o'clock. And I'm just like, ah, dude, like, you know what I mean? Like, engineering is tough. It's very mentally exhausting and it takes a lot of resources. So, you know, I would show up a little bit later because I would be coding until 1 o'clock at night. And I just didn't like that. I wanted to have the freedom. So I was like, all right, whatever. I called my buddy. I was like, hey, do you want to start an agency? Like, you're a good designer. I know how to engineer. Let's like focus on getting clients over the next week. And then I'm going to jump ship. I'm going to quit this job and we're going to work on this WordPress theme. And we're going to not make a whole lot of money, but it'll be enough to sort of build ourselves up. And then that's when it sort of triggered. I was just like, okay, I'm going to move down to Southern California, connect with my friend. We're going to start an agency and we're just going to do things on our own terms. We can work on the beach if we want to. We can work out of the cafe if we want to. And that sounds all glamorous. Starting your own business is not as glamorous as that on the surface, but you do have that freedom. Like, I don't mind working hard. I will work hard as long as there's a purpose behind it. And as long as I can sort of control like how I, you know, deliver the value. And so, yeah, that was sort of the tipping point. And that's sort of what the next phase was starting the agency to be able to bring in, not 200K. It was like 50 or 60K that we made the first year, collectively, but, still we had that freedom and we sort of had the ability to go in any direction that we wanted to. And that's when, you know, at night I was building Story Creator, during the time of starting this agency.
Yeah. How did you, so Story Creator is the app that you end up building. How did you, with all this stuff going on, right? You just kind of jumped into the entrepreneurial world. How did you, what is Story Creator and how did you get the idea for that?
Yeah. So Story Creator is an online video editing tool that's been designed to sort of like be the Canva for video. Because I believe that, you know, people need access to tools that can help them make beautiful video content. I've always felt like, even in my days of YouTube and editing videos, that After Effects Premiere Pro and Sony Vegas, those are all amazing tools, but they always have, they still do, and they've always had in the past had complexities with like building videos, and they're so open and they're so powerful that getting started is really difficult, and it takes hours of YouTubing just to like have some sort of proficiency. So my goal with Story Creator is to make it extremely easy to create a compelling video, to be able to tell your story without needing to have the chops for editing, right? You still need to have a little bit of technical savvy, like you still need to know how to log into an app and stuff like that. But the idea is you and the story, that path is as quick as possible. And so that's the idea behind it. For me, like I said, I've always been inspired by like Pixar. I've always been inspired by Disney. I've always been inspired by these sort of companies. I've also been inspired by like Webflow, like a lot of these more modern companies and a lot of these like technical companies. Like I always liked the idea of Squarespace in the past. I like the idea of being able to enable creativity. I've always been inspired by like tools like Sketch and Photoshop. That's sort of like what I said back in my late teens. That's sort of what I gravitated towards was these tools. Like when I was like pirating them back in the day, I really enjoyed the tools and not necessarily the marketing side of things. And that's how I sort of got drawn into that. But now it's like, I want to kind of go full circle. I want to be able to use a tool that can help you with marketing, that can help you create amazing stuff without necessarily needing to have the technical skills. And so that's sort of what inspired me.
That's awesome. So you created this tool that really helps people that otherwise wouldn't be able to create these assets and things like that to do that and to do that easily.
Yeah.
So when you did that and you went out to solve that problem, like how did you know it was an idea that people would be interested in? Did you do any type of like validation process or like how'd you decide to actually like take action on it and invest your late nights working on it?
Yeah. So retrospectively, I would have talked to a lot more people. The problem is I didn't know a thing about entrepreneurship and starting a business. Like I know what I know from working at startups. But that's still different when you're in a position of like an engineering role. Like I've worked at startups with only like 4 people in the past. And like, even then I learned a lot during those ventures, but even then, like you're not the CEO, you're not driving the ship. So you don't really know all the things that you need to do to be able to, you know, validate an idea, understand your target audience, everything that's like out of the book. I didn't know that starting. I just knew I really wanted to build this. I really knew that there would be value in this. And I knew that if I needed to slightly pivot, that's okay. But building the foundation is key for this video editor, because like video editor is pretty like uniform in how a lot of the things should operate on a fundamental level. So I just wanted to build the fundamentals. And I sort of had this vision of like making a Canva sort of mixed with Sketch, sort of like a design tool, but like for video specifically. So that was just kind of, I believed that was going to be needed by people, but I didn't validate it until a little bit later on. And when I did validate it, I started making a little bit of some adjustments here and there that I probably could have saved months if I would have just done that ahead of time.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're developing a tool right now, and that's kind of I would not have known to do that if my partner hadn't already been down this path 2 or 3 times before me on the software side of things. So we spent a month going through that validation process to making sure people were like interested in the concept, listening to the questions they had, all that.
There's a really good book my friend sent me called The Mom Test. I haven't actually read it yet, but I've gotten some of the good like sort of highlights from it. And it's really hard to be able to discern between what people are saying at face value versus what they actually want versus what the core problems are. Because people won't always tell you exactly what it is that that's the truth, right? Like sometimes you have to sort of listen beyond the face value stuff that they're saying. So it is an art being able to understand what it is people are facing.
So once you got like through that process, you said you made some tweaks, maybe lost a couple months here and there. Like what was the avenue that you acquired your first customer through? Like how did you get somebody, who was that first person that like opened up their, I guess there might be a difference between acquiring a user and acquiring a customer. Like how'd you get that person to pull out their credit card the first time?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was an amazing feeling for me, honestly, coming from just an engineering role and always working on the product to actually making a sale. And what I did was I just reached out to a bunch of people within my target audience on Instagram, and I just literally sent them a video DM. I was just like, hey, what's up? I see that you're running a podcast. It's really good content. And you know, I'm an engineer, and I'm just really trying to figure out the problems in this space. If you'd be interested in hopping on a call, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you. And I wasn't even going into it with the mindset of let me sell this person. I was going into it like, let me gain some feedback from users and understand where they're at. And I got on the call and we connected. And he actually lives here. The first customer I had was in San Diego. And he just told me like he was using another tool, but he'd be open to checking another one out. And so basically from there, he checked it out. He's like, I really like this. This is great. I can see myself using this. Where do I sign up? And that's all she wrote. So I think starting off with just a direct outreach, the personalized messaging, really coming across as genuine, sort of what's helped get started.
Yeah. And it's funny. That's exactly what I did during that validation phase. I did it on LinkedIn because there's no one really sending video DMs on LinkedIn. So like every time I do it, it like shocks people, but it's the same concept. It's like,
I love that.
They're gonna
do that though, because they don't. You have to like pre-record it, right?
And then no. It's in the app. Could. Yeah, there's like three little dots on the messaging window, and it'll open up a whole like 10 options that you can do within the.
I'm
messaging
gonna try
thing.
That. Yeah.
I didn't know you could do that. Yeah, and you'll get amazing feedback. So but it's the same concept. That's what we did in the validation was. Like we were trying a bunch of different things. So we had like some ads running here. We bought some spots in a newsletter specific to our industry here. I was sending video. We were just trying to see what people resonated with. But like I got so many signups just from saying a video DM. Here's our product. It's nice to meet you. My name's Ryan, addressing them by name, telling them how it could help them out and like asking them if they were interested. And so many people were like, yeah, it sounds awesome. I'd love to check it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's sort of like the go-to for any founder. I would say like my advice is if you're really trying to kickstart your thing, like that's a great approach. You just got to be confident in front of the camera, but it really adds a personal touch. And I think it's a great strategy.
Yeah, it's definitely not a scalable strategy.
No, not at all.
But it's great to get out there and
there's different levels to, like, I'm reading this book called Traction. It's from the founder of DuckDuckGo. And, you know, in every stage of your business, there's a different traction channel, right? So for the first 0 to 10 customers, there's a traction channel, right? Like you're not really gaining traction like by like sending out DMs, but like there's different phases to it, right? The first 10, just send out the DMs. Do it in an unscalable way, like Paul Graham says, do things that don't scale. Then eventually when you're going from 10 to 100, then you can sort of find another channel, maybe like leveraging influencers, getting a little bit of social proof, and then going from there, getting the paid ads and all that stuff. But it's definitely different levels.
Yeah, for sure. So after you got your first, you know, speaking of like levels, what was quote unquote level two for you? Like how did you get from A to B?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still figuring that out. I mean, we have you know, about 20 customers right now. I'm going towards 100, and what I think is going to really accelerate growth is something that I'm currently working on. It's sort of a secret, but it's a partnership with a big company. Like, not a big company, but it's like their startup, but like they have like 2 million users plus. And so working out an integration with them, I think that is going to really accelerate growth. What I'm really working on is branding. I think social proof is one of the most powerful things that you can have as an individual, as a brand, because people, it's sort of like a way for them to reduce cognitive load when they see other people liking this thing. They're just like, okay, I don't have to like discern, is this a good thing, is it a bad thing? Other people like it, I can just go do it, which is kind of scary Because, you know, if people are like going to like something that's not necessarily good, doing something that they shouldn't be doing, but everyone's doing it. So it's like that pressure or it's like, that, yeah. Oh, okay, this must be good. And then you end up going to do it. So that's why you got to think for yourself. But social proof is really powerful. Yeah. And that's what I'm working on right now.
Nice. How are you trying to incorporate social proof into your...
It's crazy. Platform. Like I've been reaching out to a lot of influencers that, have like a podcasting audience like yourself and, really just getting a testimonial from them, having them, either giving them a free trial of the product or just letting them use it for free, getting them to produce something cool with the tool and then sharing that with their audience and then being like, hey, I use StoryCreator. Oh, and then people comment like, oh, wow, what is this story character? Is it free? I'd love to go check it out. And I'll just go on there and I'll reach out to those people. I'm like, yeah, it's free. Come check it out. I'd love to work with you one-on-one. That's sort of just been a way to really get people to be like, oh, okay, like I like this influencer. I like his content. He's making his content with this particular tool. I want to go check out this tool.
Yeah, I think the social stuff is, it doesn't matter. Like there's different types of social proof and I don't think it matters what your business is, like how powerful it can be. So like for my agencies, so like my main business, like we get video testimonials from like our clients. And like, so instead of like just a little typed quote on our website, right? Like you get to see this person, you get to feel yeah. their emotion and their expression. I feel like there's not a lot of people doing that in service businesses. Right. For some reason, people want to get a circular picture of somebody's head and put a quote beside it. And that does nothing for me. Like, but if you can like get somebody talking and like see and feel them, I instantly am like, oh, like I trust that person. They're saying exactly how their experience. We don't pay them for that. We just ask them to say whatever they want to say. And I think so whether you're a software or service-based business, like you need yeah. to get social proof in some kind of way, whether it's using like tools like Proof or Notifia or like things like that, like pop-ups or video testimonials or, leveraging influencers.
Dude,
like you're saying.
I really love that actually tip that you just gave. And this sort of goes back to my last point is people sort of do what like everyone else is doing. So everyone else is doing the quotes with like the avatar and just like static, right? But like nobody's really doing these sort of above and beyond approaches just because no one else is doing it. So it's like, why do I need to do it? But I think going above and beyond and getting those video testimonials is a great idea. And that's something I actually want to incorporate. I never really thought about that.
I think people don't do it. I think it's uncomfortable for people to do the ask, right? They don't want to reach out and say like, hey, will you record this for me? And
right.
like what, and it is uncomfortable. Like it's even uncomfortable for me. My partner does it most of the time, but what we do and we find works really well is not only do we outreach to them and do the ask, we say yeah. like, hey, I know it might be uncomfortable for you to like do this on
empathy,
video.
Yeah.
Here's a potential script if you don't want to put any thought to it. No pressure to use this exactly, obviously, but if you want to leverage this so to make the process easier, here it is. And like 95% of the people use that same framework.
That's awesome.
That we give it. So they basically say exactly what we want them to say in their own words.
That's a great tip. Yeah, I think for anybody listening, that's like some serious value right there. I think the first piece of value is getting your first 1 to 10 customers. Be personal. Send out some video DMs. Don't like do things that don't scale. And then once you start having the first 10 customers, ask them in the way that you yep. approach your customers to get a really heartfelt video testimonial. That's just going to help, any other, traffic that comes to your site, really feel the value of this product and really feel that social proof in the realest, most true form possible.
Yep, for sure. So what do you think is going to take you from 20 to 100?
I think this partnership is going to be huge. That actually might even jump, growth to the hopefully tens of thousands. But I think what's going to really take me to 100, take the product to 100 is, I need help. And so I've been hiring some, folks. I've been doing some outsourcing and they're going to be sending a lot of messages to like newsletters, like you said. I like your feedback on how like your experience with newsletters was. But I think like,
I wish we would have not spent any money on ads and just leveraged those newsletters. It was the
newsletters are good. Yeah.
It was the by far the highest converting dollars that we spent.
Yeah. I think honestly, like newsletters are great. I think that's going to be amazing. What I'm working on is SEO. Like I'm not an SEO person by any means, but I've been working really hard to learn, SEO practices. And it's funny because like even when I was 18, that's like what everyone was talking about was SEO. But I never really like took the time to like put it to use just because like sometimes I get impatient and it's a 6-month process.
Yeah.
But it's something you need to be committed to your project. Any entrepreneurial project that you're on, my advice is you need to be locked in mentally for at least 1 year, ideally like 5 years, right? Like, I mean, for some people, they can build a product. They can, like, they're so good at it. They can like turn it profitable and they can flip it or whatever in like just a few months. I don't know if like that's the majority of people. Like that's really unrealistic. Some people can do that, but you need to be locked in for at least 1 to 5 years. And if you're not locked in, then you're not going to succeed. You got to be locked in, right? And you can pivot during the way, but you got to be locked in. You need that consistency. And that's something I lacked earlier in the day. So I've always started like blogs and websites that I would sort of give up after a month or 2 months, right?
Yeah, spend lose all interest the initial, and something yeah, else exactly. seems cooler and you're doing...
Exactly. Shiny object syndrome is going to kill you, right? Especially with SEO. Like you're never going to gain any traction with SEO if you don't at least commit for a year, right? So... now that I'm really committed to this, I've been working a lot on SEO. I've been seeing some results over the past few months, which is great. But I think, you know, reaching out to like PR firms, not PR firms, but like doing a PR approach where I talk to, you know, ideally get featured on TechCrunch or even like the other sites like Forbes or Business Insider, whatever I can get featured on. I think those are going to be great for SEO. There's going to be great for exposure, for branding. So that's what I'm really focused on is newsletters, PR. Highly recommend this book called Traction. He talks about all the 19 different traction channels that there are out there and which ones to focus on, how to not be biased on certain traction channels, because some traction channels that you would never even would have thought of could be amazing for growth. So I'm trying a lot of things. Obviously the first 10 customers doing things that don't scale. The next phase, I would say like PR, SEO, even like newsletters would be a good one. So that's sort of where I'm at right now.
Got it. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, the unscalable things is definitely where we're at right now as well. And, you know, focusing on long-term things, like even though this project is just getting started, like I think it was about a week and a half ago or so, I launched a YouTube channel with the same idea as you're saying. It's like long-term, like, so when, you know, 4 to 6 months when the product is ready to go live, like we already have searchable content out there on the internet, right? And I'm going super niche with my content. So I may not get 50,000 search results a month, but I'm going to get 1,000 and they're going to be the exact person that needs to see it. So that's another approach that we've already started implementing as well. And I'm learning the whole YouTube game after being in the podcast space for a few years. Yeah. Now I'm figuring out all the ropes on YouTube as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think YouTube is a great channel and that's something I really want to leverage more. It's sort of a side effect for me. Like I'll create maybe like an Instagram post on how to use a certain feature. And then I'll try to repurpose that content. So I'll get on a video and I'll actually do like a video demo and I'll use Loom for that. And I'll have a recording of my face. And then I'll just explain a specific like feature within the app. And then I'll create like a cool looking thumbnail. And I try to like create like content for every platform, but using the same topic. That sort of keeps me sane. I don't have to like come up with a new topic idea for every different platform and I'm all over the place. I just sort of laser lock in on one particular thing that I think could offer people value. And then I create different forms of that content, like maybe text form for like a blog, like an audio form for a podcast, video. Like I try to like create different forms of the content with the same topic. That's usually what keeps me sane.
Yep, for sure. So I want to loop back around. I'm not going to ask you for any specifics, but regarding the partnership, how did that come to be? Like how did the conversation even start?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, like it all started with listening to a podcast. Like I'm a big fan of the Indie Hackers podcast because that's sort of where I'm at and that's sort of my tribe because there's a bunch of other founders that have great advice. In their journey that I can learn from. And so I always listened to the Indie Hackers podcast over the past year. And there was this lady who founded this company that's a social media planning tool. And I thought it was really cool. Like, she was able, because I was sort of in that headspace, like, I want to build a social media tool. I was like, okay, this is like the perfect person to listen to. And she had great success building this company. I was like, oh, I'm inspired by this journey. Like, I think it's great. And so I sort of just went to her LinkedIn and subscribed to her, like followed her. And then over the course of the next few months, I would see her posts on LinkedIn. I would see, you know, she's from Australia, but sometimes she would come to San Francisco. And I actually shot her a few cold emails before I even started the company. Say, hey, if you're in San Francisco, I'd love to get a coffee and like catch, pick your brain. To no avail. But then, you know, I started Story Creator. A few months later, I started figuring out what my purpose was, what my value that I could add to the market was. And one of the initial ideas that I had for Story Creator, being like overly ambitious, was you create the content, you schedule the content, then you gain analytics on the content, right? Like, I wanted to have all that within the product, but I just, you know, engineering wise, resource wise, I can only really focus on one. And so that sounds like, holy crap, it might be actually a good idea to partner with somebody to like handle the other phases, right? Why do everything yourself? Like, you can't be greedy. Like, you have to be able to delegate. You have to be able to just share, basically. And so I was thinking, okay, you know what? Let me actually reach out to her with a solid email via LinkedIn. I think I messaged her on LinkedIn, then I also followed up by email or vice versa. But yeah, basically just like, hey, I have this video editing tool. I noticed that I think they were partnering with Canva. I was like, hey, if you guys need like your video needs handled, I'd love to chat and see if we'd be a good fit. And from there, yeah, we just got on a call. We felt each other out and it was just a good fit. And it was like perfect timing, right? And it just made sense on the bigger picture for the users to be able to quickly create content and schedule it out for the week. So it works. And you know, I like them as individuals. I like their mission and vice versa. So it just kind of was good timing. It just worked out.
Nice. That's awesome, dude. So what do you, like, if we're having this conversation 1 year from now, like, where do you think things are going to be at?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really want to be a well-known company. Like, I want people to be like, okay, like, quick videos, I need to go to Story Creator. Like, the same thing with Canva. It's like, okay, like, I have like an upcoming event that I want to announce via like an Instagram story through a static graphic, I go to Canva. But if I want to make something a little bit more video oriented, I want to maybe like even make a video ad really quickly, and I don't want to have to boot up like the complicated softwares or hire somebody and pay them like $800 for one quick video ad. I can go to Story Creator, I can pick a template and I can modify it, and then I can, you know, have a cool video ad ready to go. So in a year from now, I want to be a well-known tool. I want people to think StoryCreatorApp.com when they are about to make a quick video for social media.
That's awesome, dude. And one last question, because I think when people are developing a product, no, it doesn't matter if it's a service business or a SaaS tool or whatever it is, a lot of times people get focused on competition and what's the competition doing, and either they won't act on what they want to do because there's already somebody doing it, or they're always scared about what's coming. Like, how have you like approached competition? Because I'm sure there's people out there that are doing things in some way similar. So like, how have you dealt with that, like the mental game that comes there?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, it's definitely something on my mind a lot. I come from a sports background, so I'm very competitive. But I enjoy competition. I'm not trying to, like, something I've realized is you don't want to run yourself into the ground, you know, and that's something you never want to do. You want to realize that there is, like, you want to have abundance mentality, right? You want to realize that there is plenty of the market for everyone to go around. You can't do exactly what they want to do. You never want to come from the mindset of, I'm going to copy this and copy that, and sort of like being puppeteered around by their decisions. That's never a good thing. But understanding sort of what's working for them, and then just trying to do it better. You really want to be the most quality product that you can possibly be. You want to understand that the problems that they're solving, you want to understand if you're in the same space, not necessarily what they're doing, like they're sort of going to puppeteer you around if you're following them. You want to follow the customer. You want to find where their customers are. You want to find what they're thinking, what they're doing, and you just want to beat the competition to the punch. You just want to build something better. And not be dictated by the competitors. Don't worry about what they're doing necessarily. worry about what you're doing, worry about what your customers want, and focus on yourself and focus on staying in your lane and doing and just running faster and just being better. And that's really my approach. At the end of the day, I like the competition. It fuels me, but I don't let the competition dictate me.
That's awesome, dude. I totally agree. It was really tough for me because I came out of like the corporate world and never had to really deal with any of that. And then when I kind of jumped ship and was, you know, just focused on my business, like I would always be like wondering like who was doing what and like, oh God, like, but now I'm just like, I don't even pay attention. I just want to stay ahead. So I'm always like, what can we do better? Like not really focused on what they're doing, just focused on like, I know that people are coming. And I want to be ahead of whatever they're thinking about.
It's a good thing for the market because it keeps people on their toes and it keeps them sharp. It keeps the products innovative. And just imagine if like, you know, Apple had dominated the computer space and they were the only like players in the space. I feel like their technology would be shit. Like they'd get lazy, they get complacent. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd be, oh, okay, your laptop doesn't work. Okay, whatever, we'll fix it next year. Not a big deal. But no, it's like they have other people trying to gun for them, so they're on it. Like they're trying to be on the bleeding edge. They're pushing things. They're trying to come up. They're expected now to come up with a new innovation every so often, and so they have that expectation, that pressure, and it's good. Like good things come out of pressure, and obviously you have to manage that. Like last weekend, I just went to the mountains and I detached and I just like meditated in a tea garden for like 2 days, and that was great. But having a little bit of pressure and obviously being able to manage it is a good thing. It keeps you on the edge.
Yep. Couldn't agree more, Michael. Well, man, where can people find out more about Story Creator and start using it?
Yeah, great question. StoryCreatorApp.com is the quickest way to sort of just see what the product's about. You can try the Playground, which is just a free demo where you can just move you know, images around and create a video and play with the animated text. Or you can reach out to me directly, Michael@StoryCreatorApp.com, or find me on Instagram, Instagram.com/MichaelAubry, no E, A-U-B-R-Y.
Awesome, dude. Well, it was great chatting with you, hearing about the evolution, how you've kind of got out of the rat race into kind of building your own thing with plan A and no plan B, dude. It was awesome chatting with you, and I look forward to seeing what's coming, man.
Yeah, likewise. Stay in touch. Let's learn more about you and see if I can do anything to help you out.
Sure. Awesome.
Cheers.
Talk to you. And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.